Part 23, Chapter 9. Johnny quietly and efficiently neatened up his scene. In case anything happened to him, which he felt was more than likely in this American raid, he carefully briefed Angus in all the intricacies of the console. He made copious notes especially for Angus, so that he could duplicate and operate such a console. He told him some of the things that could be done with it. Angus objected violently to Johnny's going on the raid. Johnny said he was not going to risk anyone else's life, for the actions he had to take were too dicey. He would have the backup of 30 Scots, 10 drivers, and 15 pilots. Angus was still trying to protest, but it didn't do any good. If Robert the Fox had been there, the two of them might have prevailed, but Sir Robert was over in America, moving the academy, and Angus gave in, reluctantly. A Scot aide of Sir Robert's was there, and Johnny briefed him on the military aspects of their situation. The visitors were waiting for something. He was not sure what. Johnny felt it had to do with whether or not they got a transshipment rig operating. An analysis of their chatter among themselves showed they were observing the American compound, waiting for something to happen. The visitors had seen cyclos there, probably Turl and Kerr, and seemed to think the American scene might still be in cyclo hands, or in any event, might be political. Johnny expected the sky to fall in right after that transshipment rig was fired, and an alert should be out then for day 92, which was approaching very quickly. Johnny briefed another Scot officer and arranged a decoy platform to be hastily built in the Singapore area. There was a mine site there northwest of the ancient, deserted man city where the cyclos had mined tin, titanium, and tungsten. It had full hydroelectric power, atmosphere armor, and a certain amount of stores and planes left in it. A handful of Chinese, 3 pilots, a communicator, a coordinator, and this officer were to lay out a platform and poles. Johnny gave them the old burned-out console, which they repainted. Under the protection of the cable, they were to make like they were busy firing, complete with things appearing and disappearing on the platform. When the flights left the American area with the real console, the heaviest part of the escort would streak to the Singapore area and pull any pursuit of the real console away. The Kariba platform had been under camouflage nets from the beginning, and chatter from the visitors showed they thought it was a temple. He warned the officer that the attack would be heavy there in the Singapore area. But the Scot just smiled and grabbed his allocated men and left. Johnny made a fast tour of Kariba. The Chinese had done wonderfully well. There was a roof under the screen but over the firing platform, all held together with wooden pegs. Swooping gables and points made it very artistic. They had a lot of dragons around, carved from wood and cast in clay that pointed out from the beam ends with flaming mouths and scaly tails. They had bunkers inside the protected cone. They all had tiled interiors. They even had a little hospital. Their own village was inside the protective cable over by the lakeshore. It was all very colorful and attractive, more like a garden than a war area. Dr. Allen had gotten some juice of plants from up in the old Nairobi area. He called it pyrethrum, that killed insects very dead. And despite the number of animals in the woods thereabouts that attracted flies, they had had no trouble with tsetse sleeping sickness. Johnny heard them singing and playing on strange string and wind instruments that evening, so he recorded a lot of it and had them rig loudspeakers ready to play it when they activated the area. It would foul up any listening beams from upstairs. That, plus the interference the armor cable posed, would keep them ignorant of what was going on here.